Hi, ArtPod listeners. Welcome back. This is ArtPod. This is the Michigan Music, Arts, and Culture Podcast. I'm your host, Kate Wells. I'm the arts and culture reporter for Michigan Radio. And today, we're going to do our Halloween version of ArtPod. We're going to try and keep things fun, I want to say, even though both stories that we look at today are going to focus on some things that are serious as well. So today, the first thing we're going to do is we're going to talk about fat bias in our culture and our state. Here's the deal. If you heard Cynthia Canty's interview earlier this week about this, you have already been caught up. But for those of you who didn't, maybe you heard that there was an Elle magazine cover that came out pretty recently, and it had the amazing actress Melissa McCarthy on the cover. But she was wearing this enormous coat that just kind of covered her entire body. And she is, of course, full-figured. So there was a lot of discussion and heat and controversy about what was Elle magazine doing? Were they trying to hide her body? Melissa McCarthy, for her part, said, no, I completely loved this coat. I picked it out. I wanted to do it. So what it leaves us with is, once again, looking at how to have intelligent and meaningful conversations about the way we look at women's bodies. And Cynthia Canty, of Stateside, of course, sat down with Amanda Levitt. She is a Wayne State grad student, and she has been really active in this. She writes a blog about all of these issues, and she tackles things that sometimes we don't know how to talk about intelligently. So I wanted to go ahead and include that conversation here and take a listen.
This is Stateside. I'm Cynthia Canty. There was a bit of a stir recently when Elle magazine came out with its annual Women in Hollywood issues. Four covers shot with four different stars: Reese Witherspoon, Shailene Woodley, Penelope Cruz, and Melissa McCarthy. Witherspoon wore a fitted black dress. Woodley wore a swimsuit. Penelope Cruz recently gave birth to her second baby, so hers was a close-up face shot. And curvy, full-figured Melissa McCarthy was swathed and bundled up in a big coat. Now, that led to criticism. It was because she's full-figured. Although it should be noted, Melissa McCarthy herself said she liked the cover and she was glad to be a part of the whole thing. But it does raise the issue of society's attitudes towards overweight, obese people. 35% of the population of Michigan is considered to be overweight. So this is an issue affecting many in our state. Is there a bias towards fat people that would not be tolerated elsewhere? Well, joining me for the conversation is Amanda Levitt. She writes the blog Fat Body Politics. Currently, she's a grad student at Wayne State University and a fat activist, and she joins us in the studio. So good to meet you and have you here.
Yeah, thanks for having me.
So what were your thoughts with all of the conversation about that Elle cover shot of Melissa McCarthy?
It's not abnormal. I mean, photoshopping happens in every
single... Well, this wasn't even photoshopping. Yeah, no, it wasn't. This was like, put her in a big coat. We see this gorgeous face, and but we don't see her.
Well, no, and I mean, what I want to say is photoshopping happens regardless of the body size, but when you look at Melissa McCarthy, you don't see her body at all. Me and, like, we have very similar body types. And if I was in that coat, you would still be able to tell that I was fat. Like, you can't hide that. And so I think that that's the part that clearly either they think that she is far bigger than she actually is, and so they bought a coat that was four times too big, or the entire idea was to disassociate herself from her body.
Well, let's talk about attitudes, and I'll just talk about Melissa McCarthy for another moment or two. Film critic Rex Reed, when he reviewed her work for the movie Identity Theft, he described her, and I'll quote now, a hippo, tractor-sized, and he called her, and again, this is my quote, I'm quoting Rex Reed, a gimmick comedian who has devoted her short career to being obese and obnoxious with equal success. Does that kind of language pretty much sum up what you're fighting back against as a fat activist?
Yeah, I mean, and I think, too, Melissa McCarthy specifically is very unapologetic about her body. Yeah, I mean, there's so much about being in the spotlight where you are taking up space and you are using your body. I mean, she uses physical humor. And so that's so incredibly revolutionary because we don't have fat women that are on TV that are doing that.
Roseanne Barr
was
kind of a trailblazer.
Yeah, we did, but there was a very huge break between Roseanne Barr and Melissa McCarthy. I mean, I remember when she was on SNL and she was doing the skit where she was like falling down. And it was just the fact that you had to look at her body. You can't look anywhere else. You can't just look at her head. Mm-hmm. And so when you see that where she is doing something that's so much physical humor where you're consistently having to look at her body, and then you see the cover of Elle where all you see is her face and it's only half of her face, and you could totally tell that they photoshopped her face too, and then they're covering and hiding her. It's a total disassociation from anything else that she normally does. And so it's like in her film work or on TV, she's a completely different person than when you see her in print work. And it's that is something that we definitely have to fight back against.
Amanda, where do you find that this attitude, this bias against fat people comes from? And does some of that negative attitude stem from advice from the medical world about the health effects of obesity and what a harmful condition it can be? Does some of that then trickle into fat equals bad?
I think that it's multidimensional. I think that first and foremost, yes, the way that we assume that fat people are inherently diseased is incredibly harmful. There is a lot of research that shows that it has far more to do with behaviors than body size. That if you look that there, that even health within itself is not just about body size. That it includes your socioeconomic status. It includes, do you have access to fresh fruits and vegetables? Do you have access to places to move your body? Do you have access to preventive medicine? Also dealing with stigma. I mean, fat people deal with stigma. So do people of color. So do women, as well as people in the LGBT community. Also, when we talk about discrimination, we see that the people that are most likely to be discriminated against are women, women of color, poor people. So that means that women, they're less likely to be hired, they're less likely to be promoted, they're more likely to face discrimination in person, in interpersonal relationships. And that's where it's not just about medicine, that it also goes into issues of feminism, of gender. There's definitely an extreme amount of gendered discrimination that has so much to do with just women in general and embodiment and what it means to be feminine and what it means to be female that does really go into discrimination as well, that it's not just about the health portion of it, although that part definitely impacts how fat women specifically are able to engage in body positivity, because we're constantly told that you can be body positive, but you can't be fat, you know?
And yeah. So what's the key to being a fat woman, a fat person who is body positive?
For me, I'm very disassociated from negative body image culture. Very, very disassociated from media that has to portray bodies in a specific way. I try to disassociate myself from people that are negative. That means not talking to people or engaging in diet culture, engaging in moralizing of food. Because for me and a lot of fat activists, we talk about a health system. It's called Health at Every Size. And one of the main proponents for me was learning that food is food. It's okay to enjoy it. It's okay to eat food, like, in, you know, and it doesn't mean that I'm constantly eating cupcakes, but if I want to have a cupcake, that's okay, you know? And so, and it's also not berating myself if I have a cupcake, you know? So it's kind of removing all of the kind of feelings that we have about food.
What about fat politics? What does that look like in Michigan? What kind of activities are happening and what kind of activism is happening?
I do a lot of work within fat studies, which is kind of a growing movement that's very, very similar and is following the lead of like women's studies or African-American studies. We have a lot of fat studies scholars throughout the states at U of M, MSU. I'm at Wayne State, obviously. We also have, I know MSU has Body Peace Corps, which is a student-run organization, which is super awesome. I know that they do like a body monologue every year. It's kind of like the vagina monologues, but instead it's people coming and talking about their body. I was running a nonprofit for a while, but because I'm in grad school, it just wasn't feasible anymore. But a lot of it is also online and engaging with people in other places. I talk to people from Australia, from New Zealand to, you know, East Coast, West Coast, all over the country, all over the world about body politics, because it is, yes, it is very a Western idea and is very, very focused on the U.S., but there are people all over the place that I engage with on Tumblr and Twitter that I talk to about this stuff.
What's your hope for the fat activist movement? Where do you hope that we will be as a society when we look at fat people in just, let's say, 5 years?
I really hope that we start listening to fat studies scholars, but also critically thinking about the way that we talk about bodies in society and also who we listen to, you know, with the American Medical Association defining fat or obesity as a disease. But when they did that, they went against a lot of research and the entire council that they had to decide whether they should do that or not. And I really, really, really would love to disassociate the corporate interest and the diet industry away from what we actually should be talking about, which is systemic issues, which is about equality and not just about health.
Amanda Levitt, she writes the blog Fat Body Politics and part of the fat activist movement in Michigan. Thanks for talking with us. She was kind enough to join us in the studio.
Thank you.
Okay, now we are going to lighten things up a little bit. We are going to talk about how in this past weekend, more than 2,000 people all went to the same annual one-night-only masquerade in Detroit. It's called Theater Bazaar, and it transforms the Masonic Temple in Detroit into this dream world of S&M, punk rock, grandmothers in leather. And really, at its heart, it is an ode to carnival sideshows. There are plenty of people who see this as a legitimate and significant immersive art experience. Walking into Theater Bazaar is like walking into the fantasy of a twisted, creepy genius. From the dominatrix room where you can get chained, whipped, or spanked, to the glass cages where performers like Rick Rain hang suspended from hooks in their flesh.
It's definitely painful. It's not for everybody. You just breathe through it. It is what it is.
To the world-class burlesque dancers who rock Bride of Frankenstein-themed stripteases.
We were here for like 10 minutes, and then we realized that we were going to come here every year after this.
This is Matt Taylor. It is his first time at Theater Bazaar. He came because he and his friends have been hearing all of this buzz about it. Now, this is a seven-story Dust Bowl Carnival-themed mini-universe right here in Detroit's Masonic Temple. And they had heard how this is all the brainchild of one twisted artist. But now that they're actually here, this is blowing Taylor's mind a little bit.
His drawings and his sketches sort of come to life, and I see what the unusual thing is that it's an open party. Anybody can come with a costume, but you look around and you see there's a lot of people with costumes that sort of mimic his own art, which is incredible.
People have poured a lot of time into these costumes. You can tell. They've got Edwardian dresses and vampy lounge singers and steampunk time travelers.
To see people that I've never met, and I go, you look like you came from this world, but I didn't design you. It's like, that's surreal.
All right, this is John Dunavant. He is the artist behind Theater Bazaar. And he was able to dream this up because as a shy, artsy kid growing up in suburban Detroit, he would go on these family road trips to touristy ghost towns. And they would see these dioramas of old-fashioned sideshow circuses. For Dunavant, it became an obsession. This was a way to escape the white bread world. So years ago, he gets some buddies to help him build these massive carnival sets for Halloween parties that they'd have at a house. And that eventually became a full-blown underground illegal street party, which eventually the city did shut down, and they had to move here to the Masonic Temple. And now Theater Bazaar, as they call it, brings in thousands of people to play in this world that John Dunavant had dreamed up.
It was like I felt violated. It was like, get out of my head. But it's also incredibly exhilarating. I mean, it's an amazing thing to, you know, be some goofball designing some weird things and then to have people respond in the way that they do. And especially now, the way people that have been coming for years are starting to pick up on grasping that and creating their own characters that feel like they came from this world.
This year, he's focusing on some of the creepy rituals, the secret symbols, the cultish vibe that this event has, because he wants this year to be a commentary on religion.
It's man trying to struggle with his own fears. And
this is heavy for a Halloween party, my friend.
Yeah, I'm not really interested in parties. I just want to make stuff.
Obviously, not everybody who goes to Theatre Bazaar is going to walk away reflecting on man's relationship to religion. And that is okay with Donovan. This can be, he says, just a fun escapist party that pulls everybody in, from drag queens to suburban couples to a couple of 70-something grandmothers I met, one of whom was in a leather S&M costume. What matters at the end of the day is that she had the imagination and the legs to pull it off. I'm Kate Wells, Michigan Radio News. All right, that about wraps us up for today. If you have a story that you want to hear on Art Pod or you just want covered on Michigan Radio, go ahead, wander over to our site at michiganradio.org. You can follow the directions there. Send us something. Tell us about what's going on in your neck of the woods when it comes to arts, music, culture, and so on. Thanks again for listening. I'm Kate Wells. Talk to you next time.
Support for arts and cultural reporting on Michigan Radio comes in part from a grant from the Michigan Council for Arts and Cultural Affairs and the National Endowment for the Arts.